So it has been a while, but Test cricket is back for South African cricket fans. We take on the West Indies in a two-match Test series in the West Indies, and they come off the back of a series defeat to England in which they performed pretty poorly. Now, South African cricket is in a new place, and we go in with a squad that we'll talk all about and has a lot of new components and a few little pieces of the puzzle that need to fit in over the next couple of years. Now, this West Indies Test series is definitely going to be intriguing as it's two sides that just don't have a good history in Test cricket for the last few years. So I've just got Kuv with me today. It's one shot and one dot, but we're going to give you a preview to the South African West Indies Test series, starting off with that match on Wednesday. So Kuv, South Africa and Test cricket again, it's been a long time coming. The last series was some time ago against New Zealand in a series that we've all said was a write-off. We played a 8-string side there and that looked pathetic. What do you think is going to happen in this one against West Indies?
Yeah, boy, Mom, I'm quite excited to watch some Test cricket again. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a bit nervous about what to expect from this Proteas team. Very inexperienced squad. Just a handful of players that have some substantial Test cricket experience. So it could go one of two ways. They could completely tank or they could just kick off their Test careers. We'll just have to wait and see how it goes. But all in all, I'm quite excited for the series to kick off the next segment in South Africa's World Test Championship run.
Yeah. We spoke about it quite a bit in the previous episode at the back end there. We definitely need to take a more positive foot forward in the World Test Championship. It's been horrible. As we said in the previous one, four games played, one win and three losses. I almost said it the other way around because you're so used to South African Test cricket being quite strong, but as you said, completely different now. We've got a lot of young players, a few with barely a Test cap to the name. I mean, our number three that we'll talk about just now has one Test cap to his name. Yeah, two innings, four runs, and doesn't look entirely great, but we'll get into the squad a bit more. Before that, I want to talk a bit about what are we expecting from West Indies. They come off that series loss, as I said, and some mixed bag performances from most of their lot. I think we did say Josh De Silva was good there. Anyone else that you are looking out for think is going to perform pretty well in the series?
The one person or the one bowler I would have been scared of is rested for the series. So that's Alzari Joseph. So, I mean, if you have to go by the England versus West Indies series and what we have come to expect from South African Test team, it should be a no-brainer, right? It should be an easy series win. But the reality is that it's so far from that we don't know what to expect from this team. And equally, we don't know what to expect from West Indies.
Yeah, I agree.
They had one massive innings against England, 400+, and the rest were all subpar performances. What I would say is that I would like to see South Africa be dominant in the series.
Yeah.
We want to get back to the level of playing against the big three, England, India, and Australia. And we saw that England demolished the West Indies. And if it's even an even toe-to-toe battle, then that's not going to give me much hope for South Africa competing against the big boys. I know we're kicking off another phase of trying to rebuild Test cricket in South Africa. But it seems like we've been rebuilding that phase over and over again for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And we'll get into it a little bit more when we go through the squad and the expected lineups. But seriously, man, this can't be the state of South African Test cricket.
That
squad can't be the best that we have to choose from, given there should have been like a succession plan. And it seems to have so many uncapped players and players with less than five tests, it's a serious blunder on the part of the selectors on behalf of the board, because it seems like there's no succession planning, and we all bitch and moan about this in our daily jobs about succession planning and people retiring and people leaving and no knowledge being transferred and all of that, and it's ridiculous to see it on such a scale, a national sports team that's supposed to be one of the crown jewels of the country. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think you're hitting it on the head there. A lot of what we're seeing, and I think the two teams put together portray exactly that image. There's just been a lack of any foresight or planning when it comes to not just Test cricket, but across the board. Because as you say, there's so many players in both the squads that don't have a lot of Test experience or in general international cricket experience, period. There is a very interesting or funny, I should say, quote that I saw from a Barbados newspaper. So the two men at the top of selection for the West Indian cricket team at the moment are a guy with a surname Shallow and another one with a surname Graves. And the paper led with the line that all that's going to happen with these two men in charge is that the West Indian cricket is going to find a shallow grave for a sport that was loved by so many people across the Caribbean. It's finally dying because there's absolutely nothing going right. And it's the same thing with us. I think if we don't catch a link up right now, we're going to be in for a long haul that looks exactly like West Indian cricket. And I understand they've had financial difficulties, and we do too, to be fair. But there has to be a better plan in place to make sure that these things don't happen. Fair enough, both teams don't play a lot of Test cricket like they used to because of the same financial issues. But in and amongst all the other cricket that's being played, there should still be something going on behind the scenes, whether at the domestic level or in the A teams or in the schools teams, youth teams, to prepare for the next generation of cricketers. Because we went from having some of the best cricketers in and around the international scene to having people that barely anyone knows.
No, you're completely right. And if you were to believe the rumors of a meeting that was held recently, there are substantial rumors that because of the lack of money in Test cricket, that there is a big motivation for moving towards only six top-tier Test nations. And if you take, well, let's call it India, Australia, England, and I'd put New Zealand in there. I mean, they can finance some good Test series. Yeah. That's four of the six spots already taken.
Locked down, exactly. And
South Africa, we consider them to be a top-tier nation. They can't be battling against the likes of West Indies, Sri Lanka, and Pakistan to get one of two spots that are available if they go to a top six tier system for Test cricket. And I mean, like we said previously, if the lack of investment and funding for Test cricket in all of these nations is as severe as we think it is, I don't blame the powers that be for making this decision.
Yeah.
Because as it stands, it's an unfair playing ground. And we've spoken about this before. The amount of Test cricket that the top three play versus the rest, it's utter chaos and it's madness. And you can see that in the results, stats, and everything in between. So if the powers that be make the decision to just make it six teams, who can blame them?
You can't have too many complaints.
All it means is one of those three teams are either going to be hosting or visiting another team in the top six. Mm. The net money that's invested in the game is not going to be changed.
England take on Zimbabwe. I think they host Zimbabwe not too long from now. And it's going to be the first time that a touring side is paid to tour, because they've realized on their end as well, I guess, that there's just no money in it anymore. And Zimbabwe can't afford to tour England, if not for England paying them a fee to come and play on their shores. And it's probably going to get to that point. If it does go to a six-team tier system, it's very likely that a lot of the good work that has happened in cricket, like let's take a team like Afghanistan, for example, that started playing Test cricket relatively recently. They've been growing in the sport, but all of that's going to fall away pretty fast unless one of the big six, which we'll call them at that point if it happens, wants you to play cricket.
With the state of South African Test cricket, the performances, the money invested in that, Afghanistan seems like the right level of opposition for us at the moment.
Yeah. I mean,
they'd probably win.
I actually think we would struggle. We would struggle against them. Now, we're not trying to be a bunch of sour grapes here. I mean, we haven't lost the series yet. Not that we want to either, but the sentiment across most South African cricket fans at the moment, I think, and I'm not sure if you feel otherwise, again, you can drop us a comment letting us know exactly that, but the sentiment is grossly that we are in a very, very shaky place as of now in terms of Test cricket. And if this series doesn't go to plan, I foresee some chaos in the near future because, as we said, we can barely afford a series. So everyone that you do engage in 100%. Kind of want to win.
The truth of the matter is that we're grasping at straws. Hmm. We are excited that in the next year, we're playing West Indies, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and what's it, Bangladesh.
Yeah.
That's our level at the moment. And that's what we're excited for. And that's what we're nervous about. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, because if it doesn't work, then it shows, it confirms all the... Hmm.
Then we'll have to pay Zimbabwe to play in South Africa.
Yeah, and that's a modern day Zimbabwe, not one that has some Flower Brothers involved in their cricket or Heat Streak and all of those that were actually pretty good back in the day.
No, I mean, I'm with you that, you know what, we're not down and out. We're not being, or I don't believe that we're being completely negative. We're just being blunt. That is what the state of it is.
I think there's a bit of realism.
And I wish that these boys put out their hands and put in performances so that we can have a consistent test team for these next four series. What we can't afford to do is be chopping and changing the squad in between series.
Spot on there. Because as comes with all of the chaos, it's an opportunity for a lot of young cricketers now to go ahead and make themselves those cricketers that we yearn to see, to be there 5, 6, 7, 10 years from now at the top of the lot. And they can do it. We've seen a lot of potential in the squad. Now, let's just, we'll quickly talk about the squad itself whilst we're here.
No, because I think this is a good place just to lead on to what I was going to say next, was that I'm going to be a bit contradictory here and say that I'm saying that we can't afford to chop and change the squad over the next few series.
Mm.
But in the same breath, what do you think about the whole change of the selection criteria and structure in South African cricket? Because I think it's ridiculous. I think it's that it's Shukri Conrad and nobody else.
He's
jury and executioner. Like, I mean, how does that work? England tried it in the past and they were like, no,
why?
This doesn't work. After the heavy Ashes defeat, and they went back to the selection panel. What if Shukri Conrad decides, nah, I don't want this job, or he gets fired, and the new head coach comes in, and he has a totally different idea with a whole different bunch of players? How are you going to get consistency from that?
Exactly.
Yes, you gave it to Shukri Conrad now because he's been in the CSA system, he knows the players, and that's the benefit of the doubt that we're giving him. What if you have to bring a Open Gautam Gambhir to come and be the coach of the South African national test team? How's he going to know who to choose? You've got to have a selection panel. That's just the way it is.
I agree. I mean,
and if you have to make a small, if you have to make a small comparison with football, like I know there's a lot of football fans out there that always want the manager to have the final say over transfers. I've maintained that that's nonsense. Like, he should have a say, but not the only and final say. You've got a group of people that are bought into a certain culture, irrespective of sport, irrespective of club or national cricket or football or whatever it is. But you've got a group of people that are bought into this culture of the way we want to play and what we want to do moving forward. You can't give that much power to just one person.
Yeah.
And I just think that was a ridiculous move. And apparently it's been for a trial period, but that was like over a year ago. And you can't tell me that's working. Come on.
There's no evidence to suggest that it is at the moment. As the saying goes, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So if you give him all the power, as you're saying, it's not... There's a problem when he gets sacked, but there's also a problem if his vision doesn't align with the board vision or the vision of a greater good for South African cricket. We need to have a more holistic structure in place, which I think you're alluding to there. As you said, with football, it's a very good comparison because this is why directors of football have become such a big thing over the past, I would say, 10 years or so. Prior to that, there was a lot of manager power, like Sir Alex Ferguson is a good example, but that's because he was so heavily involved in all parts of the Man United structure. In the modern day, you want your coach to be a coach almost, less than a manager of the whole structure, because they are cycled over so fast, and the moment you lose someone in a position where you had far too much power, you then have to start from scratch again. And that's pretty much back in a circle to where we started here. It is exactly what the problem is with South African cricket. There's been so much change in the boardroom, behind the scenes, with management. We've chopped and changed far too much. Now, why then, when we have something that may be working just a little bit with Shukri Conrad, I don't think it is working, but I think it may work. It has the potential to work. Why are we then going and we're giving him absolute power, which kind of puts us back into that same position where mm-hmm. if anything goes wrong, it's not just going to go a little bit wrong. It's broken. You have to fix it from the ground up. In terms of the squad. So the squad is on the screen. This is the South African Test squad. A lot of new faces there. We're expecting that the batting lineup at least looks something similar to that took place in the warm-up game against the West Indies Championship 11. Aidan Markram opened with Tony DeZorzi there. Tristan Stubbs came in at 3, and we're told that the future for Tristan Stubbs is to be South Africa's Test number 3. Now, that is an interesting one. I think we'll pause bullshit. That and get straight to that.
Bullshit.
You call bullshit?
Well, not bullshit in the sense that it's not true and it's not going to happen, but bullshit as in, like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, have you ever seen a national team's Test number 3 be the explosive middle order batsman in limited overs cricket that we know Tristan Stubbs is?
There's one, but it's not the same. And to be fair, he batted 4 more than 3. But Aby de Villiers was a different breed. So we're not going to get
into that. No, come on. But he wasn't a top 3 batsman. You know, traditionally, and maybe it's what yes. South African cricket want to do, is move away from tradition to what Coombs alluded to on our last episode, that maybe they need to do something funky and fancy. But traditionally, your Test number 3 is the guy that holds your innings together. He's your pontine. He's your amla. He's not your Stubbs, bro. He's especially not your Stubbs with one Test match.
Yes. So Stubbs has done himself a few favors in domestic cricket. Okay, we've spoken about that 300 many a time for the Warriors, but he averages 50 in first class cricket. Okay, it's not.
Come on, he scored that 300. A long period. He scored that 300 against KZN in England, basically Maritzburg, where you worked. All the cricketers were running in the streets. Come on. Like, yo.
I mean, fair enough, but saying it and doing it are two different things. So I'm going to give him some credit for pulling it off, and especially because we never thought he had it in him.
If he can bat, remember that 300 came off like 372 balls.
Yeah, it's quick. Brisk.
All that meant is that he just kept pace with the limited overs innings. When push comes to shove in Test match cricket, when the bowler is bowling line and length for 5-6 overs in a row, can he score 30 of 100 balls?
So that
I personally
is, that,
don't think he can.
That is my worry with it as well. So in the
he doesn't have the temperament to be a 3.
Exactly that. In the warm-up game, he got some balls on a length that troubled the stumps, so to say. Block, block, block. Did all of that well. And then the wicket ball was a half tracker on, I could even say, 7 stump. No foot movement whatsoever. Stuck a bat out there, pushed at it, threw it so wide, ball flies to second slip. And I'm like, if you don't have the patience to bat more than 14 balls against a third string West Indies Prime Minister's 11 or whatever you want to call it, it's going to be a bit tough playing against real cricketers when we are, okay, no disrespect to the young guns that bowled in that game, but when you're playing against a big side, like just say we come up against an Indian pace attack, Australian pace attack, or even the new Gus Atkinson-led Indian pace attack, you're going to have problems batting like that at 3.
Yeah.
I will give him that he has time on his side. So he definitely can adapt to it. But
it's not his fault. Let's get that right. This is management. This is Shukri Conrad. He came out with a statement. And he made this bullshit statement about he wants the top order to be big physical imposing threats. DeZorzi, Markram, Stubbs. Like, what the hell does that have to do with anything?
I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. I think a better shot at 3. Yeah, I also hope he does well. I mean, I hope nothing but the best for Tristan Stubbs. We all rate him. We all think that he's going to be at, at, at least in some format, I would hope that it's in all formats, but at least in some format, he's going to perform for South Africa over the long time. He turns 24. He actually turns 24 in just over a week. I think it's on the 14th. So hopefully by the time he turns 24, we are saying, yeah, I know he's ready to be number three now. But the actual thing I was going to say before that is, I think David Bedingham is a better shot to bat three for us. Even though he started his test career so late for us, he's played so much of county cricket and so well. He's a very traditional number three, number four. He looks like he can anchor you in innings. He's batted very soundly in the past for us. Okay, he did play in that New Zealand game. And funnily enough, I remember myself telling someone at the time, there's only one player here that actually belongs in the side going forward. He looked like it was like a bunch of kids in a park and then an actual senior men's cricketer batting with them. Completely different class. And I think David definitely he deserves his shout now. Possibly a good option at three, but they're probably going to play him at four, realistically.
No, the top four, I think, is like set in stone. There's Bavuma at four.
So we're saying Bedingham at five, Verena at six.
Temba came out and he made a statement about it. And he said, yeah, he's ready to bat four. So I actually think, this is without going through the rest of the squad, but my preferred lineup would be Markram at three and Temba to open.
I don't mind Markram at three either, the one thing is, I don't know, we've said Markram has been poor in test cricket for some time. He is not as poor as I made it sound over the recent past. Recently, in his last like five or six innings, he's done well. But he's done well batting at the top order.
And I'm going to go back to that word temperament. Even if he doesn't have the temperament or hasn't shown it in the past, we've seen with his captaincy, he can remain calm, he can remain collected. Mm. I think he's the best shot at developing, at least, into our number three. Because you must know, this whole squad is going through development changes. Stubbs needs to flip and grow by this much to be a number three. Markram maybe by this much.
Yes,
Temba,
yes.
I don't know. Right, but even the experienced players in the squad, they're going to go through an adjustment period and they need to find new roles in the team that's best for the team. And I'm saying this because I think DeZozzi is utter trash. I don't even know why he's there.
So Tony came through the development side in the manner that a lot of cricketers should have. He was brought in, similar to Markram, brought in with foresight, captained at the youth levels, younger cricket, all of that. And he played quite well in first-class cricket. I think his average has dipped quite significantly over the recent past. It's sitting around, I think, 38 or 42 at the moment. But he can be good. It's just the problem is, when you play five test matches a year, what the hell do you think is going to happen? I do rate him. I do rate him. I think he just needs some time to click at international level. It takes everyone time, but yeah. Now the other thing is, we've mentioned all of these names, but where does Ryan Rickelton fit in? Does he bat seven? This is, I don't know.
If he bats seven, then it's a freaking complete joke. Because then they just got a straight replacement for Quinny.
The thing is, I think Verena is going to be in the side.
No, I don't think so.
I'm just taking a second here because I don't think Rickleton's going to play. And I don't know how many times we have to say this. What does the lad have to do to get into the bloody South African side? It's been years.
And I mean, like, past players will tell you that, you know what, form is transferable. Yes. As long as you have the right mindset. If you're in good nick, good touch, you're hitting the ball well, that change to test cricket is not as hard as some people make it out to be. If you feel good about yourself and you're playing well. And he's been playing well for years now.
Give him a consistent run in the side. Let him go. He should be afforded the opportunities that people like Riza have.
Just to go back to Stubbs, because you're saying, you know, a good run. So what Shukri said was that they are going to give him a good run at three. So even if he fails this series or the next, I think this whole cycle, he's going to bat
three. He's going to bat three, yeah. I wonder at what point they make a decision, though, because let's just assume that it's not going to work. If we say it's not going to work, at how many matches did he get before he's dropped? If we're being serious humans here about Test cricket, you can't have a number three averaging under 40. You can't. It's, nah. His point
they'll play him till he dies, if that's the criteria.
No, but let's be serious, right? Which serious?
Let's be serious. There's no South African. There's no South African batsman that has an average over 34.
That's the problem.
Right? I don't know what it is.
We need to find one, but that's what our whole chat here is about. Why are we not looking for the right one? Is Stubbs the best option to be the guy that averages 40? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. And I guess you, going back to you calling bullshit, I guess you're right, because I rate Stubbs, but to average 40, definitely, batting at three in tests.
No. And what we said last week, he's going to be our all-format player, go-to player, but not at three.
Not at three. Agreed. Not at three. Not at three.
Come on.
I think the better focus with Stubbs would be none of this nonsense about making him a wicketkeeper again or whatever. Let him bloody bowl, because he can. He can toss a ball up. Let him bowl and bat number five in and around all formats. He offers you something with the ball, then he becomes more valuable in Test cricket and ODIs.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Because, yeah, in limited overs, once Miller retires, then he just moves up one to five.
Locked on. Exactly. He's locked on at five. That's my thing as well. Now, okay, we've spoken about the batting and Stubbs, and I think that debate is going to go on for some time on Three Shots and a Dot, because there's going to be some ups and downs with Tristan Stubbs. For our sake, I would hope that it actually comes right for him wherever Cricket South Africa decides to toy with him. And I say that because I don't think they're doing the right thing for Tristan Stubbs. There's a lot of nonsense that goes on with CSA, and each to their own, whatever that may be. The bowling front, we did lose Jello Kutsia through injury. He has been so injury prone over the years of his young career, from age level cricket all the way to now, injury after injury in the IPL, in the off season. It's sad, because Gerald is someone that we all rate, and he could be a really gun bowler going forward for us, but he's out. Now Miguel Pretorius comes in ahead of some others. I know in the previous episode I said Beyers Swanepoel deserved a shot. People have been pointing out in the public that the big advantage with Miguel Pretorius is that he bowls really quick, can hit the 140s, high 140s, and recently he's learned how to hold a bat. He's averaging something like 27, I think, over the recent past in first-class cricket. So maybe an all-round option ahead of Vian Mulder?
Maybe, but let's just take the batting out of the equation. Just say, if you wanted to play him as a bowler, does he get in ahead of Lungi? I think Nandre Burger and KG are locked.
Yeah, I agree with that, with Nandre and KG being locked. I think if you asked me the question about Lungi 5 years ago, I would have asked you, are you mad? But Lungi's been really poor for some time now. After his recent,
but he bowled well. He took some wickets in the warm-up game.
At the back end of that, I think it was in the second innings, he looked like he was finding a lot of shape with the ball again. And we were speaking about how South Africa lacks swing bowlers at this moment in time. And I think maybe you'll get a little bit out of Lungi. So you're gonna go back to, we're starting with a new team here. We're probably gonna play a little bit of pedigree. So it'll probably be Lungi, KG, Nandre. Then one spinner,
because if
they drop Kesha, it makes no sense. You play Pete and Kesha?
No, I agree. Nah, just Kesha. If it was me, I'd play Lungi, Nandre, and KG. And for the reasons that you mentioned, plus one, and that is, just say you give Miguel Pretorius a run, okay? And he does well. And then Gerald comes back.
Yeah, you got problems.
And then you're stuck now. And then what do? Do you say, okay, kid, you did well, just take a seat? Or do you say, Gerald, you chill? That gives them more headache. You know what? We know CSA look for scapegoats. And if Lungi has to be that for them, then They come good, and they say, "Oh no, we played him because we didn't have Kutsia."
It's I don't know. It looks like problems more than like bad problems more than good problems, because the other option in that slot is Vian Mulder, who, like we've said with so many other cricketers, should have been a whole lot better than he is at this point in time. He was afforded a lot of opportunities to play South African cricket, and it just hasn't come good. Does it come good now? Does he even get a chance? Like, I don't see him.
I don't think so. The thing is that if we're going to play an all-rounder, it needs to be a bowling all-rounder, because we need options. I think
Mulder's going to get you too many wickets.
He's not.
He's never clicked that way.
He's not a bowling all-rounder. And truth be told, he's not a great out-and-out batsman either. So I think his days are gone. I don't think he deserves his place in the squad.
I don't think so. I think maybe in the T20 squad. Man, you do, but that's what happens when you watch a lot of South African cricket. We came from a very happy place, and over the years, it pushed us towards the dark side. But I agree with you. We could push. I think.
So what I would do is, I'd just, even if they give Rickleton a shot at 6 or 7, just throw him in there. 3 seamers, Kesh,
and a spinner.
Need some overs, Stubbs and Markram.
Yeah, I agree. I think you could do that 100%. And based on what they've shown, at least in the recent past, I think that should be enough to bowl the West Indies out twice in 5 days.
Yeah, and if Rickleton bats at 7, then he's in by the 20th over, so
win-win for you. I mean, look, you would be in by the 20th over, but there's 2 Oaks there that I think are going to bat a little bit longer, and Markram and David Bedingham. So maybe the
30th. I'm joking. That is a joke.
Okay, so what we've come up with in terms of the squad is a lot of problems and not many solutions to the problems. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. And as we said at the outset of this, it's going to be a lot of that for South African Test cricket going forward. Now, the West Indies side, which we alluded to earlier, has also changed a little bit. Alzari Joseph has been arrested, not dropped, as per the West Indian Cricket Board. Kemar Roach is back into the side for the first time in a long time. Of course, they do still have some other guns there, like Jaden Seals and Shamar Joseph. Batting-wise is where I think they have some big problems. I know the other day I said that they don't get many wickets, but it's okay if you're still going to score 450 like they almost did against England. I think now, after that England series, there's cause for concern with the batting as well. Not many people have played well.
No, 100%. I mean, we could have easily put on Caribbean accents and we'd be in exactly the same position. We'd be complaining about different players in the same way.
Yeah.
That's the state of West Indies cricket as well. I think that's one of the things that will make the series quite intriguing. Both teams need the win. Whoever comes out of the win will have a little bit of confidence moving into their next series. I do think that they have some performances in them, but hopefully they're not consistent, or hopefully we're a bit more consistent than them. Because if they put in consistent performances, then they're going to have the confidence and they're going to move forward, and we're going to be starting from zero again.
They've taken a few chances with the team selection. I know things didn't work out perfectly, as I said, in that England series. Now, the number 3 is either going to be between Casey Carty or Tevin Imlach, and they both have not played Test cricket for the West Indies. If I'm not mistaken, Casey Carty's played some ODI cricket. They don't average that well in the domestic scene either in first-class cricket. Both of them average around 30. Batting at number 3 is the same thing that we said at Stubbs. I think there's definitely cause for concern. And in a country that possesses someone like Shea Hope or Royston Chase, for example, why on earth are they not in this side? And if you're trying to build going forward, I understand that there's issues with T20 cricket and these guys want to play elsewhere, but surely Royston Chase belongs in that West Indian test side.
One would think, if you had to pick a random cricket fan off the street and ask him, give me your top three nations that have political slash contractual slash any issues with their cricket hierarchy in their country. 90% of them would put South Africa and West Indies in their top three.
In their top three.
And that is the truth problem. Of the matter. And that is why X, Y, and Z are not in the squad. And that's just the sad state of affairs. And it has been for the last 10 years. So.
No, I agree. And West Indian fans aren't too happy with the squad selected. Now, I'm not going to pretend that I know every youngster that has come through the West Indian domestic scene. Your time zone is completely different to ours. And of course, that means that we don't get to watch a lot of your cricket unless there are highlights here and there, or South Africans are playing in and amongst those shores so that we will make the effort to watch cricket there. But there have been a few that played in that championship 11 side. And I'm surprised that some of them are not included ahead of the newcomers. Tagnaran Chanderpaul is a good shot. He played test cricket for West
Indies.
Tangerine Chanderpaul. Justin Greaves, who captained that side, is in the side. He'll come in as an all-rounder. But there's a lot of holes in this West Indies side, and I don't see them performing too well. Now, I'm not saying that because I don't like West Indies cricket or something. Just think the honest truth, like we've been fairly realistic with the South African side, is things aren't looking good. And with the bowling attack and the top order that West Indies have, I don't see this being much of a problem for any South African side to just turn them over. If we do cut it, fine, like you said earlier, Kov. Yeah, it's a bad look for us. Now, what do we think? Are we actually going to win the series? 2-0? 1-0? Draw it? Lose it?
So, as negative as I have been sounding, I still want the best for South African cricket. And I know we have performances in us. So I would like to see us win the series 2-0. I think it's the perfect opportunity. I think, especially after the whole New Zealand fiasco, this is a good series to go into. We should have enough confidence in our abilities to win the series 2-0.
Yeah.
And not give West Indies a sniff. As bad as the state of our cricket is, I agree with you that I think theirs is worse. And they're coming off quite heavy defeats to England. Their confidence is going to be down. So I'm going to have full faith in this team that we can get the job done and kick off this cycle of the World Test Championship and get into those playoff spots.
I'm going to agree with you. I think we're back, the boys, and we've both been glum. But the more we think about it, it's what tends to happen. I will end off on more positivity. I'm just going to ask you for some predictions here very quickly. Top wicket taker in the series from a South African point of view, who do you think it's going to be?
Got to be KG. He's got to drive that bowling attack. Fun fact with KG, if he takes 9 wickets in the first match, then he would get to 300 and he would have done it in only one more match than Steyn.
Wow. That would be some record to get close to, because yeah, Dale is legendary, as we said multiple times and will continue to say. Do you think pace is going to go better than spin?
I think so. I think we've got to just play to our strengths. Kesh will take a good few wickets here and there. He'll probably have 1 5 wicket all in the series. But apart from that, he's just going to hold up one in and the pace is to knock them over from the other side.
I'm going to go with an odd shot of Nandre to be top wicket taker. He's a little bit of an unknown quantity in international cricket. And I think he has a little bit of that fire that just keeps him going. When he's got his tail up in a spell, I think he's really good. And he's young, so it'd be nice to see. Most runs, from a South African perspective, who do you think is going to be our top run scorer?
After everything we say, wouldn't it just be poetic if we just said Stubbs? No, but
I mean, I would love that.
If I'm going to be real, maybe the toss-up between Markram and Temba. But I'm just going to give it to Markram.
Also a big Markram fan. I think he has looked fairly decent in that warm-up game. He looked imperious at times. But I'm going to go back to the guy that I've really been rating, David Bedingham. I think he's going to do things. And he's going to lock down wherever he bats. If things crumble, he's going to come in and be a savior. I think Bedders is the man to look forward to. And then from the West Indies perspective, top wicket taker, top run scorer, who do you think they're going to be?
I want to say Kudakesh, just because I like his name. But I'll say Shamar Joseph. Especially in Alzari Joseph's absence.
Yeah, Shamar Joseph is the highest wicket taker in the last year in Test. He's got 17 wickets, so I completely agree with that. The Guru Kesh one is a good shot, but we have a better Kesh than their Guru Kesh. So,
yeah,
we'll leave it at that. And runs wise, I'm going to go with, I think, Craig Brathwaite. He's probably been the best apart from Jermaine Blackwood in the last however many years. They haven't had anything else. Maybe your guy, Josh De Silva.
I do like Josh De Silva. He just bats too low to be one of the top run scorers. There was the guy, Alec Athanase. When he started off, he started off with a bang. And then he went downhill. Yeah. But I really did like the look of him. So maybe he'll have a good series. I don't think that their opening partnership is going to score more than 30
in any of the innings.
So,
big shot. Mikhail Lewis and Craig Brathwaite. I think there will be some scores from Craig Brathwaite at the very least. The one thing I will say as we close out this episode, though, is that West Indies and South Africa are both in a horrible cricketing place, but South Africa's record against West Indies is second only to their record against Zimbabwe. We have won 22 out of the 32 matches that we played against the West Indies. 68% our win percentage, and we usually just turn the Windies over. Now, I would hope that continues. It's been that way since 1992. Let's hope that as we go into this two-match series, everything goes perfectly to plan for us as South Africans to see a new breed of cricket that looks a lot like the very old breed of cricket. Now, if you've enjoyed this one, please don't forget to drop us a like, hit the subscribe button, and you can even check us out on all the audio platforms like Audible and Spotify and the works.
Yeah, and we promise we'll be more positive in the next episode.
I completely agree with the sentiment, Kuv. And if you felt glum, kind of like we seemed, don't forget to pour a shot and cheers.